Join us for part two as we discuss the establishment of the Roanoke colony and its ultimate disappearance.
Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David.
Should have had some hot honey before sitting down.
Hot honey. That was my nickname in high school.
I was not hot honey in high school. I was whatever the inverse of that would be. I was cold syrup.
Cold syrup. You were the pump king.
Slash pump king, of course. Yeah.
Right. The pump king. What was I going to open with?
Thanksgiving or...
Oh, yes. To everybody's ears out there, I have to apologize if you were unfortunate enough to listen to the end of the Black Eyed Kids episode to hear my high-pitched rap in the persona of an old woman.
I mean, I thought you crushed it. It sounded exactly like an old woman rapping to me, which I thought is what we were going for.
So I've decided that I have to redeem myself, and I've given Evan the challenge of wrapping up the Roanoke Colony episodes with a Gorillaz-inspired track on which I will be rapping in the style of MF Doom. R.I.P.
I like it. Yeah. Pour one out. So I have to ask this because I got into Gorillaz back in, middle school, I guess, is when Clint Eastwood kind of came out.
That sounds right.
So what era are we going for?
Yeah, that's the era I'm most familiar with.
Okay.
But we can mix it up if we need to.
Okay.
I listened to MF Doom the whole way home today to see, you know, how I could best match his flow. And I'm scared to attempt that.
So you're going from very old 80-year-old woman,
yeah,
to one of the most well-known underground hip-hop artists to ever have lived.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And as someone who has zero musical talent, trying to emulate one of the greats is going to be a tall task, but I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, and I know MF Doom. I've seen his name. I'm sure I've heard some of his stuff, but he's the guy who wears kind of the like gladiator-looking mask is the best way I can think to describe it. It reminds me of like Russell Crowe in the first Gladiator.
Yeah. He wears a mask like that. If you just listen, he's just got such a unique sound to him,
yeah,
that like it's immediately recognizable when he's on a track.
When he passed away, I saw tons of like graffiti art and just stuff kind of giving him a nod for how impactful he was.
I believe that Richmond decided to name a new street sweeper like the vehicle MF Broom.
Before or after his passing? It was posthumous. How do you?
Yeah, is in memoriam. What Gorillaz track did he rap on?
Did he ever rap on one?
Yeah, that's why I had that idea.
Hold on, I'm gonna get Ottoman in here to look it up. Or Fritz, as he's also known. Oh yeah, so I have heard him because he's on Demon Days. November Has Come.
Yeah,
and that's my favorite Gorillaz album. It's the second one. That's a good track. So I have heard him. I knew I had somewhere.
Yeah, I knew that he had worked with them. So I guess that's the track that we have to emulate.
Okay. Done.
My musical ability peaked in fifth grade with the recorder. So
my niece got into the recorder this past year and they learned like the whole thing. I don't know if it was just Chesterfield County Schools doing their best, but we only learned three notes.
Three notes.
And it was B, A, and G. And I believe each class learned its own song. So when the parents came to the concert, it wouldn't be like four of the same terrible recorder concert.
Yeah.
But every song had a bag pun in it and the name. So I remember mine kind of had a little bit of a soulful flair. So our song was called Blues Bag.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember your bag themed recorder banger, but
you are bringing up some repressed memories right now. I don't have a clue what our song was named, but I remembered that all the classes just like sat in a row on the stage, yeah, and I'm not even sure that we stood up to play.
That's too much for a kid brain. Three notes.
I think we just like went down the line, like, yeah, this individual line of students, sit down, play your song. Next line of students, play your song.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth.
And I want to say, maybe it was for a different concert, but I probably shouldn't reveal this, but I didn't own any jeans until I got to college. It was all Adidas windbreaker pants, and I'm still made fun of it to this day, as anytime I'd walk anywhere, it would just be a lot of swishing sounds. Yeah, swish.
I remember your swishy pants.
Yeah, I was just like a soccer slash gamer nerd, so that was kind of the wardrobe of choice. But I remember there was a musical concert we had in elementary school, and they're like, you have to wear jeans and like a colored t-shirt. Color t-shirt, fine, but I didn't own any jeans. But the jeans at the time that were popular were JNCOs.
Oh, yes.
So my only pair of jeans before college was these like big baggy skater jeans.
Were they off-brand JNCOs?
Oh, they were real. I had to go for the real deal for my one night wearing jeans before I was 20.
Really splurged.
I really wanted to go out just for the nines that night.
Didn't JNCOs have like almost graffiti art all over them?
Some of them did, and I mean, they got pretty baggy to the point it looked like you were just wearing like a denim dress, but I am way too petite of a man for that look. I would be lost in the pants. But I do remember, I think that night we ended up going to a movie, and what I did like about them was I could fit an entire 20 ounce of Mountain Dew in my pocket and walk in the movie theater.
You could fit like an entire Super Nintendo in the pockets of those things.
Yeah, I think especially the bigger ones. I think a lot of kids also did try and do a whole lot of shoplifting with JNCO pants, because I mean, what better tool in the toolbox?
If anybody out there has no idea what we're talking about with JNCOs, go on YouTube and search for Sagan Baggin Barry. And that will demonstrate what the jeans were like back in the day.
Yeah, I was going to quote it, but I think we'll let the listeners discover that one on their own.
I'm sure that's got to be on YouTube.
We're really going down the nostalgia road to start this one off. I didn't think we would end up talking about JNCOs and the Roanoke Colony, but you know, here we are.
Yeah, as we tend to. The other thing we got to discuss is, well, actually two things. It's Thanksgiving week. And I just want to point out, and I don't know if you realize this, but when this episode comes out, it'll be exactly 1 year since we recorded episode one, the Dyatlov Pass.
Okay. I had no idea. For some reason, I was like, oh, was that like 4 months ago? Crazy to think it's already been that long.
Yeah. Because I came up to your place the weekend before Thanksgiving and we recorded those first two episodes. So this episode coming out will be the 1 year anniversary of the first time we hit record on an episode.
And I think we learned very quickly, two episodes in one night. Very difficult to keep the energy up, especially Dyatlov Pass, which was A, our first one, and B, just a pretty dense ride, kind of like this one, which, yeah, lo and behold, we've split into two.
Yeah.
Because we're old men trying our best.
Yeah, we've definitely come a long way since then. Yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to point out it's been exactly a year since we first recorded, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, we're still here. And we don't hate each other yet.
So what are your thoughts on Thanksgiving as a holiday?
So obvious kind of like gray area of it aside, you know, it's a good excuse to, you know, connect with family, eat way too much food, be uncomfortable on the couch for a little bit, and then do it all again like an hour later.
Okay.
But I like to keep the food pretty traditional. Every once in a while, I'm like, oh, maybe we should try like something a little off the grid, but it just kind of feels wrong. I can always do a nice meal, but to have one kind of on theme with the holiday feels like you got to just kind of roll with the classics.
Yeah. I do have to have my cranberry sauce shaped like a can.
Oh, I can't, cranberry sauce, I can't do.
At all?
The sound it makes when it comes out of the can, like I'm already out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I could just put that can on my plate and go at it. That's my requirement, is I do not want homemade cranberry sauce. I want the can.
Do you leave a can shape on your plate or do you like slice it? I've never known what you're even supposed to like do with it.
Yeah, you just like slice a chunk off of it.
It's one of those like ultra American foods, like Velveeta cheese,
yeah,
where it's like,
it is.
It's not cheese, it's cheese product, but it comes in this like weird giant gooey block. We're like, this is fine. I don't like when food mixes. That's my biggest problem with the holiday. So
that's tough.
Yeah, I want a divider plate for adults. That's my big product that I've been.
Okay.
That could be a new item for the store when that opens in 22 years.
Oddity Archive branded adult size divider plate.
Yeah, I'll be the first customer.
I feel oddly protective of Thanksgiving, mm-hmm, because I feel like it's the middle child of holidays.
How do you mean?
As a middle child, I feel a kindred pull to Thanksgiving because you have Halloween. That's the youngest child.
Yeah.
It's flashy. It's fun. People go out and have a good time. And then on the other end, you have Christmas, which is the oldest child. It's everyone's favorite. It's the classic. It's the oldest holiday.
A geriatric comes down your chimney. So it's right. Got some built-in older kind of content. Yeah.
And then in the middle is just Thanksgiving. And I feel like a lot of people see Thanksgiving as just sort of a road marker to get to Christmas.
Yeah, I feel like people think the holiday season starts with Thanksgiving and then New Year's kind of caps it out, but New Year's is just binge drinking, so I don't know how much really. Yeah, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, and so I like Thanksgiving, and I refuse to put up any Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, same.
I get mad at stores for even selling Christmas-related things before Thanksgiving.
We just went to, what is it called, At Home. It's like a home furnishing store.
Oh, yeah.
We had these two chairs out front that we put outdoor pillows on. They're seasonally themed. We were just trying to find two, like, autumn pillows. But 98% of the store is already all Christmas stuff. They had like a 90-foot inflatable Grinch, but we couldn't find any pillow that wasn't just already Christmas themed. So I don't know what we'll do there. But maybe we'll just turn over our Halloween ones so they don't say spooky. But yeah, we just like couldn't even find anything like fall themed already. And it's, you know, November.
See, that's ridiculous. In that theme, I do want to make an announcement that a coworker and I, actually Ian, the gentleman who was on the bonus episodes.
Yeah.
We have decided, we're the only two members right now. We have created the DDF, the Dads for Decorative Flags.
We just got one.
Oh,
we got the flag post. I got it for Jess for something, but we only have like two or three flags so far.
Yeah.
But anyway, finish your thought and then I'll chime in with my angry old man rant.
So we're the Dads for Decorative Flags, and the only requirements are that you fly a flag, and the only thing that can be discerned from the flag you're flying is that you're seasonal. You're into the season.
I love it. Yeah,
I love it. That's it, right? So there's no political flags. There's no country flags. There's none of that. It's just love for the season. And so we had a happy Halloween flag up before that.
Nice.
We had a it's summertime flag. We're going to get a winter flag. Mm-hmm. But that's it. It's just decorative flags.
I love it. Are you guys accepting members or is it a two member cap?
We're always accepting new members. Please, you know.
Is there any kind of hazing or anything like that? To you have to wear the flag around for a full day and only the flag.
I might involve you in the hazing. If anybody wants to join after Evan, you have to survive 10 minutes in a room with the Pump King.
No one's ever attempted it, but I'm excited to see where it leads. So my rant on the flags, and you're talking about like garden flags, right? You put it out by your driveway, or I guess it could be a full size flag too. Are you guys flying the full flag or the little garden flag?
The DDF does not discriminate on size.
Okay. All right. I like that.
Yeah.
Perfect for the Pump King. My problem is we have the garden flag that you like stake in the ground.
Yeah.
But the art is all so gaudy and terrible and looks like it was made 900 years ago. So I want to start a brand of the garden flags for millennials, Gen Zs. People are looking for a little more edge in their garden flag decorations.
Okay.
The one flag we saw that was autumn themed when we were out shopping for one, pretty close, had pumpkins and stuff like that. But then for some unknown reason, just a giant anchor in the background.
Oh, bold.
Which I don't know about you, but when I think fall, maritime hardware is not the first thing I think of. So I think we just need to put a little edge on the garden flag art form. If we can.
So do you want, you're going to have to bleep this out. So do you, mm-hmm. do you want a garden flag that's like, it's fall, mother.
I mean, sure. That can be one of them. You know, just no lower half male nudity.
Okay.
I think everything else, fair game. You know, we could have a flag that just says like, it's sexy time.
Okay. So not even necessarily seasonal, just, you know.
A celebration of life and bodies and nudity.
Just
and
fun flags.
Yeah. No, I just think there's like a ton of room for improvement in the garden flag category.
I'm a little scared for what I'm going to see next time I come to your house.
Yeah. I don't think we should go when the sexy time flag is out. And that's usually when he's wearing his flag inside. Anyway,
oh God.
So if you see those come out soon, it was my idea first.
Okay.
But it could also be that I finally got my act together and started my new company.
Okay. David, I'm leaving the podcast. I have sexy time flags to make now.
And may I put supported by the DDF on the packaging? That would be my request.
Oh, absolutely. You can do that.
And every flag purchase, 10 cents goes to the DDF. And it's definitely not a scam.
Okay, I'll take it.
Perfect. Okay, anyway, so.
I don't know how we segue from there, but you know.
I think we just go for it. So this is part two. I don't know about you, but I could probably use like a quick little refresher on maybe where we left off, or if we need to do a mile high view, I'll kind of leave that up to you.
Yeah.
On how you want to kind of bring us back into the fold here.
Essentially, just to keep it brief, England decided to colonize North America, screwed it up miserably, and ended up angering all of the Native Americans and having to flee. So basically, everybody returning back to England and convincing Sir Walter Raleigh to send another expedition to the New World.
And if I remember right, there was a bit of a hustle for him to establish a colony so that he would own part of it or get some of the profits from it.
Yeah, I forget the exact year, but he had a fixed number of years to establish a colony in the New World in order to be able to stake a claim on the land.
Okay.
Yeah, so in a little bit of a time crunch to get another colony back over there.
Okay.
And so that's where we jump in, is the last colony led by Grenville.
Yes.
They left 15 men on the island to try and maintain some sort of settlement. And those 15 men were just immediately killed by the indigenous people. And Grenville himself and everybody else returned back to England. And they were able to convince Sir Walter Raleigh, who still was not allowed to leave the Queen's side.
Right.
Hey, you need to take another shot at this and try and get some people back over there.
Because she had him on a pretty tight leash from what I remember.
Yeah. And again, lost colony of Roanoke. We're talking Outer Banks area of North Carolina.
Right.
So we're off the coast of North Carolina, and they decided that this new settlement needed to be further north in the Chesapeake Bay.
Okay.
So they decided, okay, we're going to take another shot, but we know that the indigenous tribes down around the Outer Banks area, they're hostile. So let's go a bit north and let's settle in the Chesapeake Bay.
More in our territory.
Yeah. So that was the plan. And so January 7th, 1587, this is when Raleigh approves the new mission to go over there.
Okay.
And he says that they are to go and establish the city of Raleigh. And he appoints a man named John White as the governor. And he appoints John White 12 assistants to help with establishing this new claimed city.
Are they true assistants, or is that code for slaves that they assigned him?
They're more like governmental assistants. Like, you're going to collect taxes and you're going to...
Oh, you know. Okay. Yeah, the queen's got to get her slice kind of deal.
Yeah. Once all that is decided, they find 115 people that agree to join the colony. And if you remember the mission that last occurred and kind of got shut down and they had to flee, it was all men. That was more of like a military operation. This one, they decide, we're going to try to establish a permanent settlement.
So this is like families going over?
Yeah. So there actually weren't any military folks involved with this expedition.
Oh, wow.
It was 115 people, men, women, and children. And the vast majority of them were just middle-class Londoners.
The fact that you would be willing to give up, I mean, I don't know about you, I feel like I'm pretty firmly middle classish territory to just be like, give it all away and then go to like Mars. Kind of what they're asking you to do.
Essentially. Yeah. Yeah. So the thinking behind this was, those 115 people, they're middle class Londoners. If they go across the ocean and help establish this settlement and they're successful, then they should be rewarded with some amount of land.
Okay, so there was a payoff for...
Yeah, they would essentially become landowners if this whole mission is successful.
Okay, so that's the draw.
Right. And also on board, if you remember from episode one, Manio and Towei. They were the Native Americans that have kind of been going back and forth between England and the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
Manio is really big in trying to keep peace talks going with everyone, try to stop people fighting each other. He wasn't very successful at that, but he was trying to broker peace between all the folks involved. So
yeah.
Both of them are on the ship heading back home. And of note, John White's daughter, Eleanor, and her husband, Anias Dare, are also on the journey. And Eleanor Dare is pregnant when she sets sail.
Oh, can't think of a worse place to be pregnant.
Right. So the charter was made January 7th and everything is organized and set. And the fleet departs on May 8th, 1587.
Okay.
They depart May 8th, and by all accounts, it was a fairly smooth journey over to the New World. As we discussed in part one, they had to go a little bit further south to the Caribbean and then catch the Gulf Stream up the coast to get to where they were trying to get to, which their destination was to be the Chesapeake Bay.
Okay.
And on July 22nd, they arrive at Croatoan Island, where some of these hostilities had occurred, where the tribes were well aware of the English settlers.
Was that close to the Chesapeake Bay? Did they undershoot?
They undershot, but I think that it was just kind of a stepping stone to get to the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, it was a stopping point before they moved on.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
And so they anchor at Croatoan Island, and White takes 40 men aboard the Pinnacle to Roanoke Island.
Okay.
So you have Croatoan Island, which if you look on a map, it's the very bottom tip of the Outer Banks. It's Hatteras Island now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Croatoan Island is Hatteras Island. And if you look up Roanoke Island, I messed this up in part one, but it's still called Roanoke Island. The town that is on Roanoke Island is called Manio. It's named after the Native American.
Okay, gotcha.
And if you look at those on a map, if I had to guess, they're 40, 50 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so they anchor down at Croatoan Island, and he takes one of the ships in the fleet and 40 men, and he takes it up to Roanoke Island, where he plans to rendezvous with the 15 men that Grenville left behind.
Okay.
Because again, there's no way he could have known that they had gotten killed right away.
It still just sounds so optimistic. And that just sounds like so little people to just be like, okay, we'll see you. And I mean, it must have been like a year later, right? For them to go all the way back over and then come back. Like it must have been a decent amount of time.
Yeah, it was probably about a year. You're right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as they know, those 15 men are still there. But as we know, they are not. They were killed pretty much immediately.
Yeah, right.
So they get on the Pinnacle and they start heading up to Roanoke Island, and they try to find the site of where the men were stationed.
Right.
And they find the fort has been completely dismantled and the houses are still there, but they're completely vacant and they're overgrown. And there's no sign that Grenville's men were ever there, except for a few human bones that White's able to spot.
Hmm.
They're not there. So they go back down to Croatoan Island. They load everybody back up, and someone, and we don't know who, the research that I did on this just said a quote unquote gentleman.
I know some of those.
Suggested that the boats land back on Roanoke Island and reestablish the colony there.
Okay.
So they kind of decide, we're not going to go all the way up to the Chesapeake Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We already have some houses that have been built, some level of fortification. Let's just go back to where Grenville's men were and establish a colony.
And I guess the spoiler, if you're smart enough at the start of this, is if they're going to start Raleigh,
yeah,
that is down in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they decide to kind of flip the plan away from the Chesapeake Bay and to establish the colony once again on Roanoke Island.
Okay.
They get to Roanoke Island on around July 25th, and all 115 of the colonists disembark and start trying to create a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly after that, one of the colonists, George Howe, is killed by the Native Americans while searching alone for crabs in the Albemarle Sound.
Tough way to go.
Right.
Man's just trying to crab. He's just...
So the colonists, again, quickly realize we got to try to establish some degree of peace or understanding between us and the Native Americans, or they're just going to kill us.
Yeah. Which Manio sounded like was pushing kind of all along. So,
yeah. So I don't know why any of them were surprised by any of this. But yeah. I think as we have discovered in part one, in this part, the English colonists were fairly stupid
or naive or a combination of the two.
Yeah. So they try to negotiate a peace treaty, an understanding between them and the Croatoan. But anytime they send any sort of messages to the Croatoan tribe, they just don't get any response.
Yeah. I don't know how you even start to try and do that at this point.
Yeah.
the bridge has been pretty well burnt.
Exactly.
And you're like, let's send Janet. She's great at negotiating.
Yeah. So they're trying to garner some sort of peace agreement with the Croatoan, and the Croatoan are just giving them the silent treatment.
Yeah.
They're like, we just don't want anything to do with y'all. We've seen the way you guys act.
I figured they were just like offing everybody who came out their way.
So they did kill the one guy, George Howe.
Yeah.
And then I think after that, most of the colonists just sort of stayed in their lane and they didn't wander too far from the settlement.
So the people trying to broker peace or what have you, they just like wouldn't even give them the time of day, yeah, send them, yeah, back.
They didn't kill them.
Okay. It wasn't like, oh, here comes, yeah, another one. Everybody get ready. Let's just go ahead and...
No, they wouldn't kill them. They, yeah, would, okay, they just would be like, hey, just turn around and go back. Like, we don't even want to talk to you.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, at least. Yeah, it's a little better.
So they didn't receive any response from the Croatoan. And then the other tribe that was in the area, and this is the word, I think we tried to pronounce this last time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to pronounce this again this time and get it wrong. Desamongapunk. Desamongapunk.
Yes.
I'd like to see George W. Bush pronounce that one. So
I was going to try and imitate it. It's just not, I don't even know how to imitate him doing that word.
So John White decides, okay, we're not getting any sort of agreement or even conversation with the Croatoan. Let's not even try with the Desamongapunk. Let's just attack them. So he decides that he's going to lead a preemptive strike against this tribe.
Right.
And try to catch them off guard so that they'll, I guess, leave them alone. I don't know what the thinking was with that.
I feel like that's kind of the strategy they've had so far, and it hasn't gone great.
Right. And so White leads this attack against them, but accidentally ends up actually attacking a group of Croatoan scouts. And so he further worsens the relationship with the closest group of indigenous people. So again, Manio, mm-hmm, he deserves the town being named after him.
He's a Manio of patience.
I'm not even going to try to understand that one.
A man of patience. It's a reach. Anyway,
so he jumps in. He's like, whoa, they didn't mean it. I don't really know what you say in that instance, but he is able to broker peace between the colonists and the Croatoan.
He's quite the diplomat, Manio.
He is. And for doing this, the colonists decide that Manio is to be baptized and named Lord of Roanoke and Desamongapunk.
It's just such a colonial way to approach it. Like, man, he's great. Let's baptize him in a faith he doesn't even practice.
Right. He's getting dunked in the water. He has no idea why.
It's like, what is happening?
One other thing worth noting is August 18th, 1587, Eleanor Dare, who was pregnant, gives birth to her daughter and names the daughter Virginia.
Hey-o.
And Virginia Dare is the first Christian born in the New World. First European born child. That's worth noting. Also, the main beach highway in the Outer Banks, mm-hmm, is Virginia Dare Trail.
Okay. I was gonna say, I've definitely heard that name before, but I couldn't have ever told you where from.
Yeah. If you visit the Outer Banks and you know this story, there's a lot of names that come up and you're like, oh, I know where that comes from.
Yeah.
So John White's grandchild is born into the colony.
So why is it Virginia Dare and not Virginia White?
Because Eleanor Dare took her husband's last name.
She's not married to John.
No, she is John White's daughter.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's, yeah, right. Okay. Sorry.
She's John White's
daughter. A lot of names in history.
Yeah. She's John White's, okay, daughter, and she married Anais Dare.
The look on your face was like, you stupid clown. Have you been listening to this 4-hour story at all? Oh, God. Why isn't she taking her dad's name? Okay.
Okay, so yeah, August 18th, 1587, Virginia Dare is born. And they kind of already knew this, but not too long after establishing the colony, John White had to go back to England and come back with more people, food, supplies, all the things that they needed.
Okay.
Shortly after his granddaughter is born, and he gets back to England on November 5th, 1587.
Okay.
Now, again, there's no cell phones in this time.
Right.
Not even a fax machine.
What?
And so He couldn't have known this. But by the time he gets back, the Spanish Armada has started forming to make attacks on England.
Okay.
And so Queen Elizabeth sends out a proclamation prohibiting any ships from leaving England.
Because they'll get pillaged and looted and all that.
They'll get pillaged, and we need every able ship to be able to fight the Armada.
Oh, I see. Exploration's on hold.
Right. John White comes back and says, well, okay, I need more people. I need more supplies so we can head on back. And the Queen says, not so fast.
Now you're going to be on a military mission.
No ships are leaving.
Right. I assumed they had different kinds of ships between military and exploration, but I guess it was kind of a one size fits all sort of thing back then.
Yeah, it was sort of any ships that could had to fight. And so John White, he wants to get back to his family. He wants to get back to the colony. He is the promoted governor of the colony.
Right.
And so he starts going around to just everybody that will listen to him, trying to get a ride back to the New World, because he doesn't own any boats. He has to hitch rides from other people to get back over there.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so eventually he finds our old buddy, Grenville. Mm-hmm. And Grenville has been granted a waiver to lead a fleet into the Caribbean to attack the Spanish. So Grenville has been allowed to take some ships out of England in order to attack the Spanish somewhere else. But that's at least over in the New World.
So that just gets him closer to, well, I guess pretty close.
Yeah.
He just would then would need to find his way north.
Yeah. And so White was given permission to accompany Grenville and bring along a resupply ship.
Okay.
So they're like, White's, you know, again, probably getting a little desperate. Mm-hmm. He's asking the Queen, please let me just take a supply ship. It can't fight anyways. And the Queen is probably like, sure, whatever, get away from me.
Well, and his family's still over there, right?
Yeah. All the colonists are still over there. And so the fleet is set to launch March 1588. But the weather's really bad and they're not able to depart. And while they're waiting for the weather to clear up, Grenville gets further orders that, no, you're not going to the Caribbean. You have to stay here and help defend England. So that kind of grounds the whole mission. Mm-hmm. But two of Grenville's smaller ships, the Brave and the Roe, they are deemed unsuitable for combat. And so White petitions, if they're not suitable for combat, let me just take them.
Yeah.
Right. You can't make any use of them anyways. Let me load them up with some food and stuff and take off for the New World and see what I can find.
Can't do anything with them anyway. Yeah.
So he loads up the Brave and the Roe, and he is allowed to take them to Roanoke. They end up departing the next month, April 22nd, 1588. But the captains of the ships, because again, John White is not a captain. He's not a sailor. He is just a person aboard these ships. Mm-hmm. The captains of the ships decide they're going to attempt to capture several Spanish ships on their way out of England.
With the ships deemed not combat worthy.
Yeah, not combat worthy.
That sounds like a really great idea.
And so just a couple weeks later, May 6th, they're attacked by French mariners near Morocco.
Okay.
This could have been pirates, but we know they were French.
Okay.
Whether they were French government ships or just French pirates, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But nearly two dozen of the crew are killed, and the supplies bound for Roanoke, they're just taken by the French.
What makes you a pirate? Just no national allegiance? You're just flying your own flag, even if you are from France, quote unquote?
Yeah, I think just like operating outside of the law.
Yeah. Okay.
Like outlaw sailors. So all the supplies that White had collected and put on these boats, they're looted and the ships have to return to England.
At least they didn't like murder everybody. It sounds like they just were like, give us your stuff.
Well, they did kill two dozen of the crew. So,
well, you know,
and they didn't kill everybody.
Yeah, they spared a few.
So again, White is trying to figure out how can I get back? How can I get back? It's already been over a year. Mm-hmm. And he is not granted permission for another resupply attempt until 1590.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
2 years, give or take? 3 years?
2.5, 3 years before the Queen is like, okay, now you can go back and help your colonists out, help your family out, get them some supplies.
So did tensions between these countries just kind of settle down enough that Spain just quit attacking random ships and stuff? They were good to go? Or is my history terrible and there's more that England one in there.
I'm going to be honest. I have no idea what happened with the Spanish Armada.
Yeah. You're not up to speed on your 1580s history.
1580s naval warfare.
Come on, David.
A little rusty on that.
All good.
So, yeah, he is granted a resupply attempt in 1590. And Sir Walter Raleigh arranges passage for White on a privateering expedition organized by John Watts. John Watts is leading a fleet of 6 ships, and his mission is to spend the summer of 1590 raiding Spanish outposts in the Caribbean.
So back at it again.
Right. And so 6 ships are going to the Caribbean, but he grants 2 of his ships, the Hopewell and the Moonlight, to split off and take White back to his colony.
Oh, okay.
So they get to the Caribbean, and then he's like, all right, you two go drop this dude off and then come on back. So the Hopewell and the Moonlight, they end up making it to Croatoan Island on August 12th, and they anchor off the shore for a few days. And then on the evening of August 15th, 3 days later, while anchored on the north end of the island, they see plumes of smoke rising from Roanoke Island.
Not good.
The following morning, they see columns of smoke coming from the southern end of Croatoan Island.
Mm-hmm.
So they're seeing smoke coming from north and south.
Yeah.
And White's landing party ends up spending 2 days trying to cross the Pamlico Sound. That sounds kind of odd, but to me, it makes sense because the Pamlico Sound can be extremely shallow in some places.
Tricky to navigate.
Yeah. And so, like, you would just be running into sandbars constantly trying to get across the sound. Like, for example, this past summer, we stayed at a house that was on the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, there's people in like kayaks and stuff. And I looked at this one kayak out in the sound, and it was probably 300 feet off the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And their dog was just walking in the sound next to the...
And I've heard I think the sands shift quite a bit there too, right?
So yeah.
Even if it's one way one day, the next day it may be a little different.
Yeah.
To the point where you can't really like muscle memory through. You need to kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah. And so it's hard to get across the Pamlico Sound. And that's why it takes them 2 days to get across it.
Is a sound just shallow water between? What makes something a sound, I guess, is the question.
I think the sound is just the water in between the mainland and a set of barrier islands.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And so it is a struggle for them to get across the sound. And on August 17th, they sight a fire on the north end of Roanoke Island, and they start rowing towards it. But they reach the island after nightfall, so they're not able to land until the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide that their best plan of action for the night is to spend the night in the boats, anchored, singing English songs as loud as they can, so that the colonists will hear them and know that there is somebody coming to help them.
It's like a British flair.
Right. I can't even I don't know a British song to make fun of right now.
Chumbawamba.
And it's a whiskey drink. It takes a vodka drink. It takes a cider drink.
So they're just singing Chumbawamba for hours out in the sound.
Oh, Danny boy.
Pissing the night away. We'll pay Chumbawamba for rights to the song. Yeah. This will be our one time we use a licensed track.
So they spend an entire night singing Chumbawamba.
If it was not that song, one of their like B-sides. No, if we're doing Chumbawamba, we're going to do a deep cut.
Yeah.
I'm like, Captain, we don't know the words. Anyway.
So the next morning, August 18th, they make landfall.
Yeah.
And... okay, hold on. I just completely lost my train of thought.
Was it the Chumbawamba?
It probably was Chumbawamba. Yeah. All right, let me start over here. So the next morning. Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next morning, August 18th, White and the others make landfall. They find fresh tracks in the sand, but they're not contacted by anyone. They reach the site of the colony and they notice that there is nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
All the buildings are there. The fortifications are still there. But all of the people, all of the supplies, all of the food is gone. And they find the fortifications, and inside they find that the houses, the main walls and roofs are still there, but everything else has been dismantled. Everything that could be carried had been removed, like all of the furniture, all of the supplies, all of the food.
Yeah.
There's no people there, and several large trunks that White was aware of that they had buried their valuables in, those were dug up and removed. There was no real sign of any struggle. There weren't like bodies or bones laying around. Everybody was just gone.
Okay.
And they see that in one of the trees, is either a tree or one of the posts on the front of the fortification.
Yeah.
The word Croatoan is carved into the post.
In English, I assume?
Yeah, or... yeah. Like the colonists carved the word Croatoan into the posts.
Okay.
Now, this is important. This is like the piece of information. Because John White had told them before he left, if you all have to relocate, carve into these posts or a tree or something where you went.
Yeah, right.
So they carve Croatoan, and he told them, if you are leaving in distress, put a cross near the name of the place.
Was there a cross?
No cross, just the word Croatoan. And so John White makes the logical conclusion they relocated to Croatoan Island. So I'll go through the facts and then I'll rant at the end.
Okay.
So he gets with all the other crew of these two boats, and they're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. This group of people is probably on Croatoan Island. Let's go check it out. They decide that the Moonlight, remember the boats were the Moonlight and the Hopewell.
Right.
The Moonlight, their mission already was essentially go help this guy find his colony and then head back to England. So the Moonlight sets off for England. They're like, peace, best of luck. And the crew of the Hopewell says, all right, let's go down to Croatoan Island. Let's figure out where your people are. The next morning, the anchor cable of the Hopewell snaps in half.
Yeah.
And so that crew is saying, we're in a treacherous area for boats. We got to kind of rethink this.
Yeah.
And so they strike a deal with John White and essentially say, okay, we're going to head back to the Caribbean for now. We're going to repair the anchor cable. We're going to resupply. And then next year in the spring of 1591, we're going to come back up here and we'll find your people. So they basically compromise with John White to go fix the boat, wait out the winter, and then in the spring come back up to find the colonists at Croatoan Island.
When I also just put two and two together, so his family's missing.
Yeah.
Somehow I totally blanked on it. Like, he went back to see his wife and...
his daughter.
His daughter wife.
Yeah. I don't know why you're like, so set on him having a daughter wife. I
thought, it was just the day I was just like, this just doesn't work. No, but his daughter, his wife, and...
son-in-law and a grandkid.
They're gone.
They're gone.
Yeah. Somehow I forgot about that.
Yeah. So now he's even more distressed. Like, he just spent 3 years in England desperately trying to get a boat to come over.
Yeah.
He finally does. And they go there. And there's no evidence of them having died or anything else.
Yeah.
So it's still just a complete unknown.
And he must actually like his family because he's been trying pretty hard to get back, you know, despite all these hurdles that he's been getting put in his way.
Right. Yeah. He's pretty desperate to get to Croatoan Island to try and find his family and this whole settlement that he's supposed to lead.
Yeah, right.
The crew of the Hopewell makes that deal with him. We'll come back in the spring. However, in trying to get back down to the Caribbean, the Hopewell is blown way off course and they end up in the Azores, which is way out there. So that ship eventually has to also just return to England. They get blown so far off course that they're like, we just got to go back to home base and regroup and try and figure this out.
Yeah. Well, and you were talking about no fax machine and whatever else back then. If you're his family, do you wonder if he's even coming back at this point? You might think lost at sea, something like that.
Yeah.
Just bailed. Like, that's a long time to just wait for dad to come home.
Right. So he ends up back in England on October 24th, 1590. And once again, he is trying to find another ride back to the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
So he tries to convince Sir Walter Raleigh, let's get back over there. Let's try and figure out what happened to this colony. Sir Walter Raleigh, not a great human being, kind of deduces that as long as the colonists haven't been found dead, he can claim that he has an active colony over there.
Right.
That's the leg he's going on. Then he essentially runs with that for 5 years.
So he doesn't want to send people because if they do find...
If they find them dead, then his claim is over.
Yeah, right.
And so eventually in 1595, 5 years later, he decides he is going to go over. The queen allows him to leave England and Sir Walter Raleigh travels across the Atlantic.
And I'm sure he would have no bias whatsoever in what he does or does not report back.
Right. So this would be 8 years since the colony was last seen.
Yeah, right.
So he claims, he tells everyone, I am going across. I am going to try and find the lost colony. However, research has shown documents from him and paperwork that he was actually going over to try and find the lost city of El Dorado.
Okay.
Right. One of those mythical cities.
Yeah, like Atlantis.
Yeah. And so he really is just using the Roanoke colony as a cover story. And in reality, he's just trying to find this like mythical city of gold.
Yeah.
He does sail past the Outer Banks, though. And he says weather prevented him from landing.
Wink.
Yeah. Which if you're in the Caribbean, you kind of have to sail past the Outer Banks just because that's how the Gulf Stream works. Mm-hmm. And so he had to go that way anyway, so he can just claim, I tried.
As he's sailing by, like, El Dorado.
Yeah. So then he comes back. And then in 1602, he decides he is going to lead another mission because he is such a wonderful person.
So John White just out of the picture at this point, like, sorry, you don't see your kids and wife.
Essentially, yeah.
So he's just out.
John White's out. And now Raleigh is just like hanging on to this to better his own needs.
That's crazy. So he just never sees his family as far as we know again.
Right.
Sir Walter Raleigh's like, well, I'm going to go find the lost city of gold. So... deuces.
Yeah. So that was 1595. 7 years after that, 1602, Sir Walter Raleigh says, you know what? I'm going to go find these lost colonists. So he takes an expedition back over in order to find the colonists. Wink, wink.
Right.
In reality, what he's doing is he's taking ships over there to harvest sassafras from the New World. Because in 1602, there was a huge run on sassafras in England and the price of it skyrocketed.
What do you do with sassafras?
All I know is that people make a drink out of it, like a root beer.
It's like a root beer, but different than a root beer, right? Is that sarsaparilla?
Sarsaparilla.
Sassafras? Sarsaparilla. All of your finest sarsaparilla.
Probably it's like root beer.
He said with his 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, so sassafras takes off and Sir Walter Raleigh is like, hey, I gotta go find the lost colonists. But really, he's just going over there in order to harvest sassafras to make more money. So that would be 1602. That would be what? 14 years since anybody has seen the lost colony.
Yeah, I'm just going to trust your math on that one.
Then the next year, 1603, Queen Elizabeth is no longer queen. King James is in power. Mm-hmm. And he implicates Raleigh in the quote unquote main plot, which was some sort of alleged plot to kill King James.
Okay.
So King James essentially says, Raleigh, I don't trust you. You were trying to kill me, and strips him of all power, all titles, all ability to do anything.
Do you know if there's any credibility to that claim or King paranoia settling in?
This is another instance of I only know the history that's right in front of me.
Yeah, you can make it up if you want. Yeah. People just listen to what we say and believe it, Dave. We got to start taking advantage of that.
So King James, better known as Kevin James, a.k.a. the King of Queens.
Yeah, a.k.a. Paul Blart.
A.k.a. Paul Blart. Mall cop. He ruled with an iron fist.
And an iron segue.
Yeah. So Raleigh is just now completely out of the picture.
Yeah.
So the same year, 1603, there was one final expedition that supposedly has the intention of finding the Roanoke colonists. This is led by a man named Bartholomew Gilbert, and their intended destination was the Chesapeake Bay. but they were forced to land in some other unspecified area near there.
Why are they even still looking for him at this point? Just
probably just curiosity, honestly.
Yeah.
So Bartholomew Gilbert, he leads a group and they land somewhere near the Chesapeake Bay. So they were already pretty far off course.
Yeah.
And shortly after making landfall, you guessed it, they're killed by a group of Native Americans.
Yeah.
A few of the crew are able to escape and they return to England. We weren't able to find anybody. We were attacked as soon as we made landfall.
A bit of a pattern there.
Right. All right. So then we move to 1607 with the establishment of the Jamestown colony.
I know that one.
The Jamestown settlement. Yeah. The field trip. All central Virginians have been on.
And you must take it annually or you are not a Virginian.
Yes. Jamestown. And then you stop by Yorktown also.
Yeah. Have you gone back as an adult?
No.
More aimed at a child demographic than I remembered.
I believe that.
I went back. I think this would be so cool. And I was like, this is all fake. What is this?
I just remember it was like a big deal that we're going to Jamestown and Yorktown.
Yeah.
And still to this day, I could not tell you the historical significance of Yorktown.
No, I had like soccer tournaments there, but I think it was a bat. That's a more, what I remember more so than the actual important history.
What's the historical significance of Yorktown? Evan's soccer tournaments occurred there.
No, I think it was a battlefield.
I you're asking the wrong person. I don't know.
Like I said, it is a question. I like to state my facts as questions so I can be corrected if I'm wrong without being wrong. No, but Jamestown does have the boat that's kind of docked off the settlement. That's kind of cool to walk around in. It is like a replica deal, but I definitely thought when I was going back as an adult, it was going to be ruins or that kind of deal. And then you go there and realize like...
You thought it was going to be the actual building structure from the 1600s?
That's how I remembered it as a kid. Yeah. So, and granted, sure, there's a lot of context clues or just, you know, general knowledge to correct that thought. But so I walk up and I'm like, why is it so clean? All of Jamestown is so clean. It's like 500... What year are we in? Years old.
400.
I just didn't remember it at all. So I thought it was artifacts and stuff kind of just refitted a little bit. But I was like, this hay bed looks very fresh.
This hay isn't 400 years old.
Jess, something isn't adding up here.
I'm picturing...
I promise I'm not a dumb person, but I feel like on this podcast, I routinely just sound like the world's biggest jackass.
I'm picturing you like going into the gift shop and like going to the bathroom and being baffled how the Jamestown settlers had plumbing.
Oh my God, they could flush back then?
They had a Dyson touchless hand dryer?
Oh my God. Yeah, so it was a learning day for me as a 30-year-old man to find out the Jamestown settlement is actually more of like a recreation. The kids there were quicker to pick that up than me.
Oh. So yeah, 1607, we're there with John Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
John Smith's hanging out.
Yeah, as you do.
And he is captured by the Powhatan.
Yes.
And their leaders allegedly described to him a place called Oconahonan. I'm saying that wrong. And they say that in this place, there are men who wear European-style clothing and have walled homes. So some idea of Europeans somewhere else, right?
Or they took the European stuff after they murked everybody and then built stuff using those supplies, maybe, or learned some of their tech.
Could be.
Anyway, TBD. Continue. You're talking to the guy who thought Jamestown was real. So I'm not the right guy to ask.
Now, yeah, so I'm not sure that the Native Americans went on like an undercover operation where they're like, let's just dress like the Europeans and live in their homes. And then when they come, we'll jump out and get them.
I like to picture them going to this tribe and they're all just have like pompadours and JNCO jeans.
Yeah, JNCO jeans. So the leader of the Powhatan describes to John Smith, essentially, like, there are stories of Europeans living in various places.
Okay.
And so John Smith sends out two search parties looking for these villages, looking for a colony of Europeans somewhere, right?
Right.
Their instructions are to find the lost colony of Sir Walter Raleigh. And unfortunately, neither of these groups find any sign of the Roanoke colonists living in the area. And again, this is Jamestown, Virginia. And so they are quite a ways from Croatoan Island.
Right.
That's 1607. By 1622, the Powhatan, they end up attacking Jamestown. And at this point, there's a huge shift in the British commentary on Native Americans. Essentially, when the Powhatan attack Jamestown, the British royalty go into full propaganda mode against the Native Americans.
Yeah.
This is when that huge shift of they are lesser than, they're not real humans happens.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that happens in 1622. And at that point, it sort of ends any type of even trying to have a relationship with the Native Americans.
So the Europeans now, are they still trying to colonize, or are they pumping the brakes, or is it just anytime we send people over, they're going to have muskets?
Well, the propaganda machine, I would imagine, was pumping in order to get the British over there.
Okay. Get some people to sign up and go over to.
Yeah. By saying we have to go destroy these savages and, you know, they don't deserve the land anyways. It's ours for the taking.
Yeah.
And so they were really gearing up the machine of getting over there and taking over the new world.
Right, right.
That's 1622. And that would be 34 years since anybody has seen the lost colony of Roanoke. And for all intents and purposes, that's where this story ends.
I was about to say, so 1623, they find them and they're all just...
So that is why this episode could be titled The Lost Colony of Roanoke, A Rant by David, because John White makes it back to the colony 3 years later. He told them, if you relocate, carve where you relocated to. They carved Croatoan, which is the name of a well-known island.
Mm-hmm.
And then no one ever makes it to Croatoan Island to try and find them.
Yeah.
Nobody ever even checks on. Well, they try to check on that, but no one is ever able to make it to Croatoan Island to see if the colony was there or not. Right.
Yeah.
And so I get from just like a brief description, right? Oh, well, there's this group of colonists and the guy went back for resupplies. And when he came back, they disappeared. I get that being a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But once you dig into the topic, there's not a whole lot of mystery to me because they went to Croatoan Island and then nobody bothered to go there and check on them.
Your theory is they made it down there and lived out their days, or maybe a Native American tribe came and wiped them out, but no way to know. Nobody went down there.
Yeah. So the two main theories, and we'll go through some other stuff. Mm-hmm. Really, the two theories are one, they died. They went to Croatoan Island. That tribe, tensions were high and just murdered them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they went down to Croatoan Island and assimilated into the tribe.
Yeah.
Like those are really the only two options. And no one was ever able to confirm or deny either one of those.
Yeah.
But in my mind, for all intents and purposes, we know what happened to the colonists of the lost colony of Roanoke. They went to Croatoan Island. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's a little bit of a rant for me.
Like I said, I think somewhere in the first half, we learn about this in school probably annually before this field trip that apparently I didn't process very correctly. But I don't remember any mention of there being a sign carved into the wood anywhere. I don't know if they intentionally leave it ambiguous for entertainment. But like in school, I don't remember ever hearing that they left a sign of where they went or anything like that. I thought they're just like, and no one knows.
Yeah.
But I don't remember ever hearing any of this kind of like conclusion to it.
Yeah, because it's not that great of a story to be like, and then nobody checked on them. But yeah, so that's what happened. There's a few other things to touch on.
Mm-hmm.
In 1998. 30 years ago, a team led by David W. Stahl.
Stahldreyer?
No, not Stahldreyer. Stahle.
Is this where you put yourself in the story? Yeah. An expedition?
Led by me. They did a study in the Tidewater area of North Carolina to measure droughts I don't know if they were doing this specifically for the Lost Colony, mm-hmm. but they were measuring essentially like quality of growing seasons.
This is where you like just dig into the ground and take a core sample kind of thing or something?
Yeah, I think it was core samples of trees and they were counting the rings and stuff.
Okay.
And their study was able to produce data ranging from the year 1185, so like way back.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
All the way up to 1984. So like a huge range. Like that's what, 700 years. And in that 700 year range, they were able to determine that 1587, the year the Roanoke colony landed, was the worst growing season of that entire time period.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's consistent with them needing to go and find supplies or...
Yeah, we're out of food. Let's hit plan Z.
Yeah, we're out of food. Nothing's growing. Like, we got to go figure something else out. The next thing, I don't know how much it really ties to this story, but I'm going to talk about it because I've been there on Hatteras Island or just north of it.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go with on Hatteras Island. There's a famous tree called the Cora tree, C-O-R-A, the Cora tree. And I was in that same house I was talking about when we were on the Sound.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like looking on Google Maps for like restaurants and stuff. And there's a little icon that's like famous tree. So I was like, what the heck? So I click on it and it's like the Cora tree. And it's like, this is a haunted tree. A witch created this tree, blah, 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 blah. Like,
everybody get in the car.
We're going right now. So I drove over there and parked just like in the median and started looking at the Cora tree. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But there's been some talk about Cora being close to Croatoan. Maybe it was some sort of like they carved Cora into the tree to like signal that that's where they made it to or something like that.
But if it's your one sign to leave behind, you're like... I don't want to carve all this.
Yeah. So the connections to the Lost Colony are weak at best. There is a whole famous story about like a witch cursing someone and lightning striking the tree because it is like really gnarled and old and stuff.
What kind of tree are we talking here? Is this oak, dogwood? Those are the only two trees I know. Pine.
Redwood.
Evergreen. No.
So I parked in the median. I went up to the Cora tree where C-O-R-A is carved into the tree. I'm staring at it and I'm like, oh, there it is. And I start taking pictures of where Cora has been carved into the tree.
Yeah.
It's just like in a neighborhood.
I was going to ask, like, is this a park or?
No, it's just like in a neighborhood. And then this old man in the house that's like right next to the tree, he's like, did you see it? And I was like, yeah, it's right here. And he's like, no, it's not. He's like, come around the other side of the tree.
So somebody else carved Cora.
No, so I was just looking at the complete wrong side of the tree, like thinking that I had seen it, when in reality, it was on the complete other side of the tree. He was like, it's right there.
You thought you saw Cora, but...
I thought I saw where Cora had been carved into the tree.
Oh, because it's been long enough that it's...
I can send you a picture. It's barely readable now.
Yeah.
But long story short, he's like trying to give me this whole history of the tree. And then he's like, come here, I got something to show you.
Uh-oh.
So then he like comes out in his driveway.
That's when I'm like, I gotta get back in the car. Yeah. Thank
he
you.
He
like
comes out in the driveway. He's like, hey, come here, I got something to show you. So he like comes down the stairs into his driveway and I'm like, sure, why not? So I walk over there and he just starts showing me pictures of an albino squirrel that he saw like a couple of days. He's like, yeah, this is that white squirrel that comes around all the time. He's eating the food out of my bird feeders.
His name's Chumbawamba. He's great. He loves nuts. You're like me though, where I have so little control over peer pressure. People just like, hey, do this thing. I'm like, okay. And it's like, hey, David, why'd you go in that weird man's garage? You didn't know. I don't know. He recommended it.
It paid off. It paid off.
So he imparted no further historical knowledge other than...
Well, I was trying to egg him on. I was like, what can you tell me about the witch with this tree? And he just started laughing at me.
What was his name?
He never told me his name. I don't think he lived down there. I think he was visiting.
Maybe it was a warlock instead of a witch.
It and could
it was
have him. Been a warlock. The coral lock.
Yeah. And you proved yourself with the albino squirrel test.
I was worthy.
Yeah.
And then the last thing to cover, just because if you look this story up, if you dig into it, you're going to hear about the Dare Stones.
I assume named after
Virginia Dare, the Dare family.
Yeah.
This is a series of 48 stones that were found all the way from North Carolina down to Georgia. And these stones have carvings on them, and the carvings allegedly tell the story of the colony's relocation to Atlanta.
Where were they placed?
So,
like, how would it ever? All right, I guess we're going further south. So everybody keep your eyes open for a rock.
So the thinking is that they carved one of the stones up in North Carolina. They traveled, and like each day they would carve another stone until they ended up in Atlanta. And then the stone stopped because that's where they settled.
Yeah. Meant to be a breadcrumb thing or just...
So that's the thought process behind it. All 48 of the stones were found by three men, Bill Eberhart, Isaac Turner, and William Bruce. Mm-hmm. And they alleged to have not known each other. But researchers were very easily able to show that they had known each other for years. And they had been friends since childhood. And they were able to find that the 48 stones were all found along a path leading directly to Isaac Turner's home. So the whole idea of the Dare stones has been pretty well
fell apart pretty quick.
Debunked. But if you listen to this story or some sort of sensationalized version of it, you could hear about how the Dare stones tell the story of them relocating, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I admire the thought, and the idea of just tricking historians, I always think is amazing.
And so that's the end of my notes.
Yeah. End of David's rant.
End of my rant. So what do you think happened to the colonists?
I mean, I don't think you're too far off. I just don't think anyone can even really say what they believe happened because there's no follow-up proof, really. Sure, we never hear from them again. I mean, it's like it could be anything or it could be nothing. And there's not much of a way to point one way or the other.
Yeah. I can add, I should add, that recently, like within the past 10 years, archaeologists on Hatteras Island have started discovering silverware, tools, implements from the time period of the lost colony.
Okay.
Now, if you're someone who really wants to find this colony, you're going to say, oh, see, that proves that the British ended up here, that the colony relocated here because they're finding this stuff.
Yeah.
But
more funding, please.
Right.
Yeah.
But it could just as easily be stuff that was taken from the previous expeditions that had been raided and attacked by the Native Americans. And so it can't conclusively be tied to the lost colony because there was a lot of interaction between the Native tribes and the British in that time period. And so it's not unreasonable to think that the Native Americans just took some silverware from the British.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I feel like I'm usually trying to find the science behind whatever we're talking about, whether that be how to explain paranormal or research to help us understand the picture a little clearer. The drought seems like a pretty big signifier of why they might leave, right?
Yeah,
especially if you're waiting for a supply ship to come back that never does. At a certain point, you're going to be thinking, I don't think they're coming back.
Yeah.
It's leave. It's hope for... truce with people you've been actively poking in the eye for a while. Yeah, but it seems to me drought, what do we do from here? As far as what they did to try and solve having no food, no water, whatever it might have been, they had to leave just hoping they would find a solution.
And they probably decided the closest other group of humans is the Croton tribe. So let's head down there and pray for the best.
Yeah. And I'm thinking probably didn't go so well based on how they'd been treated. And it wasn't the one person going to set up a ceasefire. It's probably the whole village. So they're going to look out and see, you know, however many people were left at that point walking towards their camp, whatever it might, you want to call it. I don't imagine they're going to feel great about that.
I do think one tick in the assimilation column is that a good portion of the colonists were women and children. And I don't know that the Native Americans would have as quickly just offed them. So again, either they were killed or they assimilated. And that's where this one ends, because nobody knows. They disappeared, like the lost colony of Roanoke. They disappeared in a sense that nobody ever found them, but we pretty well know where they went. We just don't know what happened when they got there.
Yeah. So there's still a little mystery to it, but I understand why you, as somebody who like deep dives this stuff, would be like, I mean, there's not as much here as we always act like there is, but there is still a little bit of, you know, what happened to them.
It's an interesting story tell.
Yeah.
About the growing tensions between the Europeans and the Native Americans, the idiotic decisions that the Europeans made on numerous occasions, just sort of building that tension between the groups, which leads to this mystery. Because if the tension wasn't there, if they were just very peaceful with each other, then it's like, of course they assimilated, right? But tensions were extremely high. And so we have to include the option that they got killed.
I feel like colonialism and overconfidence often go hand in hand, where you see it as, well, we're going to colonize them for their own good.
Yeah.
And then you get dunked on repeatedly and you're like, well, it's not our fault. I mean, we're clearly like the smarter people. Yeah, exactly. Let's get back in there. Lesson learned, or maybe not. Well, props. I know this was like loads and loads of dates and names and stuff, but well told in a way to keep it interesting without being, you know, a string out of dates and all that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll end that there. We do have 2 weeks from now, we're going to have our first-hand experience on the podcast.
Okay.
We got a guest coming on in 2 weeks to hear his first-hand experience with a cryptid.
Can we say which one, or do we want to, you want to keep that secret?
It's the big guy.
Bigfoot.
I am pretty hyped.
It's your boy.
To hear a first-hand Bigfoot encounter. I'm ready for this one. As we're recording this, we're recording that episode tomorrow night. I know nothing about this encounter, so it's going to be a fun conversation.
And I thought Bigfoot was like one dude, and then I can't remember if it was last episode or before, you're like, no, it's a whole species. So I'll be coming in very green. You'll be coming in a little more knowledgeable. So I think it'll be a fun one.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And I think with that, everybody have a happy, safe Thanksgiving, the best holiday. The middle child of holidays.
And me and you are both middle children, so we know what it's like. It just needs a rebrand.
Yeah, maybe it does need a rebrand.
What's a synonym for thanks? Grateful day. Grateful day. There we go. Problem solved.
Grateful day.
So everybody have a great, grateful day. And I guess we should hit the social stuff.
Yeah. Follow us over on Instagram, Oddity Archive Podcast. Last month, we had 2 spooky season giveaways, and I will be having probably a December giveaway coming up.
Cool.
So if you're interested in entering, follow us over, Oddity Archive Podcast on Instagram. Stay up to date with the show. And feel free to email me, oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. I check it every day. So if you send me something, I'm going to reply.
And drum roll, please.
Oh, yeah.
David, it's your chance for the MF Doom
Redemption.
Redemption. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. There we go.
I have to redeem myself as a rapper.
Do you need to get an MF Doom character? Is there anything we need to let you do before you jump in?
Say a prayer for me.
Say a prayer. All right, we say a quick prayer, and we'll let David jump into this one.
All right, here it comes. Drop the beat. Made landfall on August 23. Found the colony abandoned. Pardon me. Thinking they died, I need a band-aid for my mind. Tried to find my family. Saw Croato and Cog, got worried they were starved. Time to get rowing down the coast, but I can't boast. The Anchor Line's toast. Going back to England, can't help but thinking. Lately, ruminate on the fate of my daughter and her baby. Maybe I can talk to Sir Walter Raleigh. Explain we were folly to not check on the colonists before we need the services of a paleontologist. He said he had to maintain his claim, but where did he go? Straight to El Dorado, Figaro, Figaro. Now I gotta wait till 2034. Get with Teeter, step back in that Chevy door.
I am David Stooldreyer, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tanis. Follow her at Tanis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.